Into the worship team, our youth leading us with Leah, and I appreciate their ministry to us. Such a blessing for us to be joining them as they worship, as they lead us this morning. So thank you for leading. So we have been in this sub-series on the book of Matthew as we're working our way through. We've been looking the last couple weeks at the topic of kingdom judgments. Judgment in the sense of not condemnation, but the king of the kingdom, the one who has the right to say this is what it means to be in the kingdom, these issues, things like divorce, things like what is upside down and right side up in the kingdom, things like greatness. We've looked at these topics over the last weeks, and today we conclude this part of kingdom judgments, this part of the Gospel of Matthew, by looking at the topic of sight and insight. So a number of years ago, my oldest son, Eli, started playing cricket. So here is Eli this summer playing cricket, and I had zero exposure and understanding of the game of cricket. How many of you are wildly familiar with the game of cricket? A couple very tentative hands. I would have been maybe like that, having seen some people playing somewhere. So I had zero understanding of what was going on. And so I would attend some of his games, and I would see the ball being thrown, or in a baseball terms, as I was a baseball player, being pitched. But in cricket, it's called bowling. So when they're throwing the ball to be hit, they are bowling. And as I would see the bowler bowl the ball, I would watch it, but I wouldn't understand always what was happening. Because sometimes the bowler would bowl and the ball would be hit, and sometimes the batters would run. And sometimes the bowlers would bowl and the ball would be hit and they didn't run. And I had no idea why sometimes they ran and other times they didn't. Then there would be other times where the bowler would bowl and the ball would be hit and it would be caught and everyone would go crazy. And then there would be other times where the bowler would bowl and the ball would be hit and it would be caught and everyone just kind of stood around and went, okay. I had no idea what was going on. I had sight. I could see the game, but I didn't have insight or understanding into what was actually going on the field. Now, the more I've been there and the more I've heard about the game and the rules, the more I understand what is going on, I'm getting more insight into the game of cricket, but there are still times where something will happen and I will say, why did that happen or why did that not happen? You probably have experiences like that, whether it's with a game or something else, where you see, you have sight to see, but you lack understanding, you lack insight into what is actually happening. And this is the way it is with Jesus and the things of the kingdom. That sometimes we can see him, or people can see him. People may read or have ideas of the kingdom or the teachings of Jesus or who he is, but not actually understand. Not actually have insight into who he is and what he is doing. They have sight, but lack insight. Matthew concludes this section on kingdom judgments by showing Jesus' judgment between the crowds who had sight, but no insight, and these two blind men who lacked physical sight, but had insight into who Jesus was and how to find healing. So let's begin this morning by looking at the crowd. There are sermon notes in your bulletins, two simple blanks with more notes if you're a note taker that you can follow along. Let's begin looking at the crowds. And as we do, we will see that sight doesn't guarantee insight. Sight does not guarantee insight. See, sometimes we can focus on the physical, but not have spiritual eyes. The crowd that was following Jesus had physical sight. They had seen the miracles, that Jesus had performed. They had eaten the food that he had miraculously multiplied. They had walked along with Jesus. They had heard the teachings that he had. But it was with often physical sight, not spiritual insight. Because this crowd is the same crowd that, as we'll see in 2 weeks, we'll take 1 week off of Matthew, and in 2 weeks, we will look at Matthew chapter 21, which is the triumphal entry. It's Palm Sunday. This is the crowd that on Palm Sunday is waving palm branches and saying, "Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord," who are crying out, "This is the King. Blessed is the King." And it is the same crowd who just a few days later will be standing in a mob in front of Pilate and will be calling, "Crucify him, crucify him." How do you go from declaring he is the King to crucify him in just a few days? It's because they had sight, but not insight. It goes back to the parable of the sower and the whole purpose of parables that Derek preached now several months ago on what parables were all about. If you are in Matthew 20, just move a few pages back. We want to look back to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13, where Jesus gives the purpose of why he spoke in parables. He says in Matthew chapter 13, verses 13 through 17, he says this. "This is why I speak to them in parables." And when he is saying this, he's speaking to his disciples, talking about why he speaks to the crowds in parables. "This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing," you see this? "Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. You will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become calloused. They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them." But then he says to the disciples, "But blessed are your eyes, because they see, and your ears, because they hear. For I tell you the truth, many prophets and righteous men longed to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but did not hear." What is Jesus saying? He's talking not about physical sight. He's talking about spiritual sight. He's not talking about audible hearing. He's talking about spiritual hearing. He's talking about being able to see and to hear in the spiritual realm what God is doing and what he is saying, and then having hearts to receive it. He says, the crowds are fulfilling what the prophet Isaiah said, that these people's hearts are hard, they're calloused, their eyes are blind, their ears are shut off. They do not see or hear or understand what I am saying. They had opportunity to, and he wanted them, and he would welcome them to come, but they do not. And so here is the crowd in Matthew chapter 20, fulfilling what Jesus is taught, what Jesus does here in Matthew chapter 20. "For this crowd, full of physical sight, lacks spiritual insight." As they focus on the physical without spiritual eyes, they were also focusing on externals and not on the heart. They were focusing on externals, not the heart. Why is it that as the crowd is following Jesus, as Jesus and his disciples are leaving Jericho for the last time and on their way to Jerusalem, where Jesus in just a matter of days will be crucified, where he'll be buried, where he'll be resurrected, why is it that as they are following, you have two blind men who are on the side of the road? They hear that Jesus is coming. They call out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us." And the reaction of the crowd is not, "Hey guys, come on in. We've seen what Jesus can do. Come on in." Their reaction is, "Be quiet." And why is it that when those men don't listen, they are told, "Be quiet. Don't say a word. Don't come near Jesus." Why? Why the harshness to these two blind men who are likely begging as they call out to Jesus? Well, to give us a little bit of understanding, I would invite you to turn to the Gospel of John, to John chapter 9. So if you're in Matthew, make your way back just a little bit in the Bible. You'll come to Mark, Luke, and then John. John chapter 9. John chapter 9 helps us to get an idea of why the crowds were so harsh to those blind men who were likely begging. Because this is the story of a man who was born blind. John recounts, beginning in verse 1 of John chapter 9, that as he, Jesus, went along, he saw a blind man from birth. So this is the way this man was born. Likely these two men who are here in Matthew chapter 20, they were probably blind from birth as well. And his disciples ask him this question, "Rabbi, who sinned? Was it this man? Or was it his parents that he was born blind?" If you look ahead to verse 34, as the story unfolds, the Pharisees are talking to this man, and this man is giving testimony of what Jesus has done for him, and they replied, verse 34, to this they replied, "You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" And they threw him out. What's going on here? In the day, it was believed that if a person was blind, it was because either they or their parents had sinned. The reason that they were blind, it was a consequence of something that they or their family had done. And so the crowds are crying out, "Get away, because you are sinners. You are this way because you or your parents have done something wrong." In John chapter 9, verse 3, Jesus says this, "Who sinned? Neither his parents or this man sinned. But this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life." I would encourage you to read the whole story later today. But it's fascinating because it's the Sabbath day when you're not supposed to do any work. And so Jesus bends down and near the dirt, he spits into the dirt and rubs it around with his own saliva and makes some mud and takes the mud and puts it on the man's eyes and tells the man, "Go and wash in the pool of Siloam." And the man obediently goes to the pool of Siloam, washes his eyes, and as he washes his eyes, his sight is given. It is restored to him. For the first time in his life, this man born blind sees. This causes all kind of a stir because all the people go, "This is the guy who's been begging. We've seen him. His neighbors are familiar with him." They start to say, "Could this really be the guy, or does it just look like him?" And they all say, "No, this is actually the guy." They're a little bit divided over time, but all this kind of conflict come. The Pharisees do some investigating. They get mad at Jesus because he did some work on the Sabbath by making mud. It turns into a whole brouhaha. And they ask him, this man, "What does this guy do for you?" He says, "I don't know who he is or what happened, but one thing I know, I was blind, but now I see." By the end of this whole thing, Jesus has this interaction with this man, has some interaction with the Pharisees, and I'd like you to see how this story ends in verse 39 of John chapter 9. Jesus says, John 9:39, "For judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, "What are we blind to?" And Jesus said, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains." You see this theme throughout the scriptures that there is this idea that this man was physically blind because of sin. And Jesus is saying, no, it's not because of sin this man was blind, but you who have seen all of your life, you the religious leaders, you the ones who have insight into the things of God, should have insight into the things of God, you are actually the blind ones. This play on physical sight, Jesus relating to spiritual sight. And in Matthew chapter 13 and here in John 9, though they have eyes to see, they are blind. Ever seeing, but never perceiving. Ever hearing, but never understanding. See, it's possible to have physical, but not spiritual sight. It's possible then as a result to focus on the externals as the crowd did, not on the heart. And actually marginalize and cast aside those because of our focus on the externals and not the heart, illustrating for us that sight does not always guarantee insight. You know, as I was thinking about this passage this week and thinking about what the crowds did to these two blind men, I think about how possible it is that we can do to those blind men what the crowds did. That we, lacking spiritual eyes to see what God is doing and what is going on in individuals' lives, in looking then at the externals and not at the heart, how easy it can be to do what the crowd did and see the poor and assume that they are lazy and unwilling to work. And that is the reason that they're poor, rather than looking at the heart and what God might be doing. Of how we can easily be tempted to look at the immigrant and to see the immigrant and to assume that they are dangerous and that they broke laws to come to our country and not actually see what God is doing and what they might be calling out to the Lord for. How easy it can be to look at the LGBTQIA plus community and see and assume that they are obstinate to God and his created order rather than looking at the heart and what God might be doing. How easy it can be to look at those who have had abortions or those who are for choice and to assume that they are just selfish murderers who don't want to honor God and not look at the heart. And how easy it can be to look at Ravens fans. I'll just leave it there. See, friends, we have the propensity to look at the externals. And in all of those groups, there are certainly those who do those things that I mentioned. They are absolutely true for some. But we have the temptation, and we can so easily look at the external and assume that this is what is going on internally. Because what would it look like if some of those groups were on the side of the road and Jesus was passing by and we were in the crowds and they were calling out, Lord, Son of David, have mercy. Would we be saying, come, come you who are poor. Come you who are an immigrant. Come you who are in the LGBTQIA plus community. Come you who have had abortions or are for choice. Come close to Jesus as you're calling out to. Or would we say, get away. Be quiet. Friends, it's easy for the temptation to be there. To be like the crowd. To have sight to see things about God, but not insight into him and into his heart and what he is actually doing in us and in the lives of people around us. It's kind of like the Jesus optical illusion. I had this, my parents had it in our home when I was a little kid. And I would look and look and look, and I had absolutely no idea what this thing was in my house. Until one day, you may see it, the J, the E, the S, the U, and the S. One day it clicked. And I remember being that little kid who always would look at that thing because it was right in front of our TV. And so in the TV time that I was allowed to have as a kid watching cartoons, there was always that thing there. Like, what in the world is that thing? Until one day I saw it. I had eyes to see. And friends, sometimes we can be like the crowd. We can look and look and look and look and look and not have eyes to see. But friends, sight doesn't always guarantee insight. But insight can be seen. What does it look like? What does insight look like? What are its characteristics? Well, I believe from these two blind men, there are some characteristics that can be measurable to see what kind of, what it looks like for there to be insight. Four things I want to highlight. The first, insight can be seen in desperation. Insight can be seen in desperation. You see, this was likely these two blind men's only shot. They'd lived these marginalized lives as the people shunned them because of what they assumed was the reason that they were blind. They were looked down on by society, and when they heard Jesus was passing by, they shout. Friends, a person with insight is a desperate person. I'm so grateful for our time of worship this morning where the worship team led us in that place of coming for our hunger and our desperation to be stirred up. Sometimes hunger and desperation can be stirred up because we have these ideas of there's a struggle in my life. There's a need that I have. There's a situation that's beyond my control. I realize and I'm desperate because I can't do anything about it, and my only hope is for God to do it. And even when the circumstances are not what makes us desperate, there can be that desperation, needs to be that desperation of I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm desperate for God. Understanding that he is life for us and that without him we have no hope, but that he is our hope. It's seen, insight can be seen in desperation. These men were desperate. Insight can secondly be seen in messy faith. Seen in messy faith. Two ways I believe we see messy faith here in this passage with these two men. The first is through imperfect theology. Commentator Michael Green makes the point that they call out Jesus, son of David. Jesus, son of David. Now, Jesus absolutely is the son of David. Jesus absolutely is the one who will rule and reign on the throne of David forever and ever. When he returns, he will come and he will sit on David's throne and he will rule and reign and bring peace to this world. But Jesus, during his ministry, did not often embrace that title. Why? He did not embrace it, not because he's not the son of David, but because he came not to be the son of David in the ruling sense at this time. He came to give his life as a sacrifice for sin. While he is the one who will fulfill the Davidic covenant, Jesus shied away from it in his ministry. It will come. But what Michael Green makes the point is that a little faith, even when theology is imperfect, is what is needed. Because it is in the person of Jesus. A little faith put in the person of Jesus is all it takes. He moves, friends, in spite of our theology. Sometimes we think we have to get all of our theological ducks in a row, all of our I's dotted and our T's crossed for there to be the movement of God in our lives. But it is all about faith in him. We strive for good theology. We strive to get things right in our theology. But even when we are imperfect in it, he still moves. Messy faith is seen in imperfect theology. But it's also messy faith seen when it is loud and uncomfortable. These men don't fade away, go off into the side when they are rebuked. But instead, they get louder. Can you imagine how uncomfortable this moment was? This was an uncomfortable moment because instead of these men being put off and being quiet, they got louder and louder and louder. It got loud, especially for those without sight. Friends, many times we will see faith as being messy, faith as being loud and uncomfortable. I remember hearing a story from a pastor who has been impactful in my life. And as he was sharing one time and preaching one time at a service, he was preaching on Jesus as healer. And at the end of the message, he invited those who were in need of physical or spiritual or emotional healing to come forward and to receive prayer. And as they came forward, this one woman came. And as she came to two people. One of them was the pastor who was praying for them. And she came and she was unable to speak. She was already starting to cry. And so because they didn't know what to pray for her, they just began to, as they put their hands on her shoulder, they just began to say, "Jesus, come. Jesus, come. Jesus, come." And as they simply said, "Jesus, come," this woman began to cry more. And she cried louder and louder and louder to the point where she had to almost crumple down because the weight of her tears was so strong. And this wasn't about a 2 or 3 minute kind of thing. The pastor talked about how it went on for 15 or 20 minutes of this woman just crying, weeping, sobbing. And there were many who were still there, and they were getting very uncomfortable. What is going on with this woman? Why won't she just stop? Till eventually, her sobs began to go to gentle cry, until she stopped crying, and until she started to laugh. After all of it, and she was finally able to speak, the pastor asked her, "What was going on?" She said, "My father abused me many, many times when I was growing up. And I've lived under the pain and the shame and the burden of that for years. And as I heard that Jesus is healer, all I could do was come forward, and Jesus met me in the depth of my pain." All of that wailing and sobbing was because Jesus was ministering to her. Now that made everybody that was there really uncomfortable. It made the people who were on the other side who were trying to receive prayer, they were having a hard time concentrating and listening to what God wanted to do in the lives of other people. But you know what? God was moving in faith. Faith sometimes is messy. Sometimes it's loud. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. And when there is insight, it will often make the people around you go, "That's a little scary. That's a little different." It's seen in messy faith. And I want you to hear that if nothing else, that there is permission that faith can be messy. You don't have to have all the right answers, and it doesn't have to be all held together, because when Jesus is the object of our faith, he's going to do good things with it. Insight can be seen in desperation, in messy faith, but also seen in change. The insight can be seen in the change that results. In verses 32 through the end, Jesus stops and he asks them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they answered, "We want our sight." And Jesus had compassion on them and he touched them. And immediately they received their sight. Jesus asked these men what they want him to do. And as he heals them, change comes. Friends, insight can be seen in that change comes in our lives. It may be dramatic, or it may be small and incremental. But when we have insight into the person of Jesus, when our faith is in him, when we don't just have physical eyes, but we have spiritual eyes to see, there will be change in our lives. Jesus will meet us. He will change us. He will transform us. He will conform us more into his image and likeness. He will move. Sometimes it can be slow. Sometimes we may have to persevere in faith. It's always not this magical thing that I have insight and I have faith and boom and boom. Sometimes we have to continue to labor on in faith. But friends, when Jesus is seen, when we have insight to see who he is, there is change. And lastly, insight can be measured and insight can be seen in following Jesus. These men, as they immediately received their sight, they followed him. Notice at the beginning of this passage, it says that in verse 29, as Jesus and his disciples were leaving Jericho, a large crowd followed him. But these men received their sight and also followed him. But I believe there's a different kind of following that's here. Because the crowds, as I mentioned at the beginning, the crowds that are saying in one moment, "Hosanna, Hosanna, Hosanna," are the same crowds who will cry, "Crucify, crucify, crucify." See, we can follow him, and when he doesn't do what we want, we cast him aside. Or these men who receive their sight immediately follow him. Think about all the options they had. Surely they had family. Surely they had things that they had always dreamed of doing. They had never worked jobs. They were likely beggars because poor men or blind men were beggars. So we had all of these hopes and dreams that they could have had. But what do? They follow Jesus. It's the same call that Jesus gave to his disciples. Come, follow me. See, insight can be seen by responding to the same call that the disciples were invited to. Come, follow me. A life of discipleship, a life of following after Jesus, a life of denying ourselves, of taking up our cross, a life of sacrifice, but in it, a life of truly gaining our lives and of truly finding our sight in him. Sight doesn't necessarily guarantee insight. But insight is something that can be seen in our desperation, in our faith, even when it's messy, in the change in our lives, and in choosing to follow him. As we close, I would simply ask this question. What describes your life more? The crowd or the blind men? Would you say that your life would be more about physical sight than spiritual sight? Would your life be more characterized by focusing on the externals of what God is doing in the lives of people around you and not what he is doing in your heart? Take a step of faith this morning to ask for insight, for eyes to see. And maybe this morning you would say, yeah, I have insight. My eyes have been opened to see the glory of Jesus. But I believe that the Lord also wants to say, for those who have eyes to see, there's always clearer vision. There's always greater sight. The Apostle Paul prayed for these believers in Ephesus. I pray that the eyes of your heart would be opened to see the glory of Christ, that you would have the spirit of wisdom and revelation to know him better. Not know him for the first time, but know him better. There's always more vision that we can have of Jesus. And so as the worship team would come, I would encourage you to take a step of faith this morning. And that step of faith would be just to come forward and to say, Jesus, I want insight. I don't want to just be stuck or satisfied with sight. I want insight. And if for the first time you're saying, I think I've had sight but not insight, that today would be the day you say, Jesus, I want to see, not with my physical eyes, but I want to see with the eyes of my heart, that I would see you. Or maybe it would be, I've seen, my eyes have beheld the beauty and the wonder of Jesus, but I want to see you clear. I want greater insight into who you are. I want to see you with the eyes of my heart. Either way, I would invite you to take a step of faith this morning and to come and to ask the Lord for insight. So, Father, recognize how needy we are for you. And recognize how good you are, Jesus, that you're the one of compassion would meet us to open our eyes, that you would give us insight into you, that you would give us insight even into the lives of people around us of what you are doing and how we can join you and how we can say, come close to Jesus and not push others away. Jesus, have mercy. We want to see. Open our eyes. In your name, Jesus, I pray. Amen. I invite you to take that step of faith and to come.